This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM, by mobile app, and on the web at kexp.org. My guest this morning is Gordon Padelford, Executive Director of Seattle Neighborhood Greenways, a volunteer coalition representing many neighborhoods across Seattle who plan and advocate for safe, equitable, and comfortable streets, connecting us to the places we want to go. Gordon Padelford is here to tell us about the work of Seattle Neighborhood Greenways to advocate for biking and walking in Seattle and to create safer streets. Welcome, Gordon.
Thanks for having me.
Would you like to begin by saying a few words about the history of Seattle Neighborhood Greenways?
Sure. We got our start back in late 2011. Some volunteers from Northeast Seattle and Wallingford and Beacon Hill all managed to find each other. They're all independently working on ways to make their neighborhood streets safer to walk and bike on. And they said it'd be much easier if we banded together as a coalition to really advocate for the needs of our communities. So those three neighborhood groups formed an overarching citywide organization called Seattle Neighborhood Greenways. And shortly thereafter, Kathy Tuttle was hired on as the first executive director. And she grew the organization to 20 neighborhood groups citywide, and hired me on as her second employee, and she has just recently retired and is off traveling the world looking at sustainable cities around the world. And from the beginning, we were really focused on sort of three core ideas. One is that all people of all ages and abilities and walks of life really deserve a safe neighborhood to be able to walk, bike, and live in. And two, that change is really possible. Right, we can change the way our cities are shaped to reflect the needs of our communities. And that three, putting people at the center of that is really the solution to the equation. It's really, we are the people we need to get this sort of work done. So those are the three ideas it was founded on, and that's really carried through the whole way of the organization. One note about the name, Seattle Neighborhood Greenways was originally founded to bring this sort of solution around sustainable streets to Seattle called Neighborhood Greenways. It was very popular around the country and the world. They go by different names, but basically they're non-arterial streets that are calm so that people can feel safe walking and biking on them. And Portland had a bunch at the time, and Vancouver had a bunch. And these volunteers got together and said, why doesn't Seattle have a bunch? So that was really the impetus behind forming, was really to bring that solution to Seattle and focus on the needs of people of all ages and abilities. But since then, since we are reflective of these different neighborhood groups around the city, we try and reflect the different neighborhood needs, and our scope has expanded to include everything having to do with making great places to walk, bike, and live. So sidewalks, crosswalks, bike lanes, pocket parks, everything on our street that really helps us reflect the needs of our community.
What are the key priorities of Seattle Neighborhood Greenways? Would you give an overview?
Sure. So every year, this is fairly unusual, but we have our volunteer leaders actually setting our priorities for the next year. So that's really exciting because it gives them a chance to help shape what we're going to work on. This year, we have 10 different priorities. We have one for each city council district. For those listening outside of Seattle, Seattle's operated on a district council system for our city council. So in West Seattle, we're working on the Delridge Corridor to make that safe for people walking and biking and taking transit. In Southeast Seattle, we've been working for a number of years on Rainier Avenue, which is Seattle's most dangerous street. So we're working to make that safer. In Capitol Hill, we're working on connecting downtown to Capitol Hill via Pike Pine. And we're excited that the mayor has recently decided to move forward with that project. So we're really excited about that. Just feet from here, we are working on the new arena and making sure that people who are going to the Sonics game and whatever the hockey team is going to be called, those games are able to get there safely walking and biking and don't have to drive. And then in the U District, we're working on getting people to the light rail station that's coming in 2021, making the light rail station more accessible for people walking and biking and really creating a thriving small business district there. So one of the exciting ideas coming out of that is to create a pedestrian-only Ave, which still has to go through a lot of community process and working with the small business district to make sure we can find a way to do that that's going to be successful for everyone. But if we pull that off, that will be the second only pedestrian-only street in Seattle, and the first one we built in the last 50 years since Occidental and Pioneer Square was made into a pedestrian-only street. In Green Lake, we're working on making sure that that loop road that goes around Green Lake is safe for people walking and biking. And then lastly, up in North Seattle, where they don't have sidewalks, we're working on finding solutions to making it safer to walk in the street, something called home zones we're looking to pilot up there.
Would you say more about the home zones?
Yeah, happy to. So home zones is an idea that's been tested here very briefly in West Seattle and around the country and around the world under different branding. But basically, it's the acknowledgement that here in Seattle, with the current funding and current costs, it's going to take 300 years to build out a safe place for walking on every street. And that timeline is frankly unacceptable. We're working on both the funding side to figure out how we can get more funding into that equation, but also on the outcome side, how we can do things more cheaply and efficiently. So home zones is on that outcome side where we're saying, you know, what can we do to make these non-arterial streets safer to walk on? You know, I think a lot of us have experienced Waze or Google Maps routing us onto these non-arterial streets, and you end up with this thoroughfare going down what used to be a quiet neighborhood street. So really looking at tackling that problem by making sure the people who are driving through what used to be a quiet neighborhood street are really the people who that need to be there. People that are living there or visiting there or fire trucks or emergency services or delivery trucks, but really making sure that the bulk of the traffic stays on the surrounding arterial streets and thereby creating this nice neighborhood where it feels comfortable again to walk on the streets, to walk your dog, to garden in the front, to let your kids go, walk to the neighbors, really a sort of city we all want to live in.
So how are you going about doing that?
We had an initial meeting a few months ago asking different community leaders in North Seattle for their ideas about where this could be piloted. And right now we're talking with a community just north of Green Lake about whether this would be a good fit for their neighborhood. And we're hoping to engage them in a really collaborative planning process around what tools we have available to do things like wayfinding, so that way they know how quick it is to actually walk to the library, or things like diverters, which is a fancy way of saying, you know, putting a couple planter boxes in the street so that way you really can't drive quickly through the neighborhood. So it's still at an early stage and we're hoping to pilot it. And we know that council member Rob Johnson has also been interested in piloting something like that. He's been calling it under a different branding of permanent play streets, but we think home zones is a little catchier.
What are some of the key accomplishments of Seattle Neighborhood Greenways over the past year?
One thing we're really proud of is the community package. And that was a collaborative effort between us and other transportation groups and neighborhood groups and affordable housing and park advocates around the Convention Center redevelopment, which is at the heart of Seattle. It's right between downtown and Capitol Hill on I-5. They're looking to expand into what is currently the Convention Center Tunnel Station. And as part of that, they needed to take over part of public land, essentially public streets, for their building to make that viable. And we came together and said, you know, this is a really important part of the city and we shouldn't be giving this up lightly. We really need to get a fair deal for the people of Seattle. So we banded together. And instead of fighting for the scraps individually, all these organizations got together and worked with City Council and worked with the mayor's office and worked with the developers to come up with a $82 million package of community investments for affordable housing, for closing some of the worst open space gaps in Seattle, and for making it easier to walk and bike around that community. So we're really proud of that collaborative effort. You know, growth is always hard, and so growing gracefully is a real challenge in Seattle, as it is a lot of cities right now. So that sort of collaborative effort is the sort of model we hope can be spread elsewhere.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Gordon Fidelford, Executive Director of Seattle Neighborhood Greenways. Our topic is the work of Seattle Neighborhood Greenways to advocate for biking and walking in Seattle and to create safer streets. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP, 90.3 FM by mobile app, and on the web at kexp.org. What is your overall assessment of the bicycle and pedestrian infrastructure in Seattle?
You know, it's not where it needs to be, is the quick summary. We are a lot farther along than a lot of North American cities are. So I have to start by stating that, you know, if you're listening in Florida, you have a lot longer to go, and we're with you in solidarity in that. But that said, right now, like I said earlier, we're still 300 years away from building out safe places for everyone to walk. And that's just sidewalks. It doesn't include the fact that many signals around the city really don't prioritize people walking. And even though walking is the fastest growing form of commuting in downtown Seattle, we're not really recognizing and prioritizing that. So there's some major challenges around walking, right? Whether it's the adaptive signals program, really just trying to adapt our city streets to be highways instead of prioritizing them for people walking. You may have experienced that out on Mercer Street here. Or it's places like Southeast Seattle or Far North Seattle, where you may even have a sidewalk along Rainier Avenue or Aurora, but it is so broken up and disturbed that it's really not accessible for people with disabilities to access that the transit that's vital for them to get around. And it may be places where kids don't feel safe walking to school, or their parents don't feel safe letting their kids walk to school because the walking infrastructure just isn't there yet. So we have a long way to go. The city's making progress, but we're really looking to make progress at a much faster rate. And then around the biking question, Seattle has been making strides over the years, but we are still a really long way from having a connected network that gets people to the places they want to go. We have these little pieces here and there, and I think everyone in Seattle has seen pieces here and there, and there's often this question I get of, why aren't more people using these pieces? And the answer is, you know, they're all mostly disconnected. What's there sometimes isn't fully safe or comfortable, and what is there often isn't connected to the next pieces. You know, for instance, the basic bike network, which is an idea for the center city in downtown Seattle, just to have a very skeletal system of bike routes for people to safely get around, isn't connected to Capitol Hill yet. We're excited that the mayor is going to be implementing that in 2019, but we still don't have that yet. We're looking to connect that to South Seattle through to Dearborn Street. We're looking to connect that to the Westlake Trail. So right now, even the pieces we do have for people biking really aren't connected.
Say more about Seattle's basic bike network, about both the location and infrastructure.
Sure. It's an idea we've been collaborating with Cascade Bicycle Club on for a number of years, and it's similar to what a lot of cities around the world are doing, which is saying you really need to provide people a network of safe streets that all connect to each other and get people where they need to go safely. That's the number one. If they don't feel safe, they're not going to go. You need to be comfortable on the street. You need to feel like you actually belong and are being prioritized and you're not just an afterthought. Otherwise, you're going to hop back in your car or hop on a bus or something like that. And then really conveniently, right? If you're being penalized at every light, or if you have to do this crazy zigzag route and it's not convenient, you're not going to do it. The flip side is, on my way in up to the studio, I came from downtown on 2nd Avenue, which is just a beautiful facility, and that got me here quickly and conveniently and safely. And it really demonstrates what can happen when we do things right. You know, that has seen 40% growth in just the past year in the number of people biking on it, because it connects just a little bit farther. So once we build out a network of safe places to bike, even the city itself estimates that biking is going to double. So that's a really exciting change that'll really help everyday folks see biking as a form of transportation for them, not just for a few strange folks like myself.
Say more about the protected lanes in the bike network and how they're different from just putting a stripe down on the road.
Yeah, that's a great question. So for a long time, the sort of engineering world, like the street engineers, really thought that if you just sort of, you know, painted down a bike on the street and told people where to go, or you painted a little bike lane on the street, that would really be sufficient. But the research over the years has really demonstrated that that is sufficient for maybe 2 to 5% of the population, folks like myself who are more comfortable riding in traffic and figuring out where they need to go and jockeying with cars and all of that. But for kids, for families, for folks who are getting older in life and need a little more protection from vehicles, which turns out to be about 60% of the population really wants that level of protection, just a painted line really isn't going to cut it. So we really like to see more physical barriers. You know, in Seattle, we've been seeing some great examples of planter boxes, which has the side benefit of just making the street beautiful and a great place to sit out at a sidewalk cafe and just enjoy living in a city, in addition to providing that buffer from traffic that is so important to making it comfortable for people of all ages and abilities to want to bike in the city.
So why focus on downtown for the bicycle network?
Downtown is only one part of what we're working on. It is an important place to start because so many folks want to access downtown. You know, we are very neighborhood focused, but in a way, downtown is everyone's neighborhood because everyone needs to get down here, whether it's for a civic event or a cultural event or to work. Most people who are in Seattle need to get downtown at some point, and biking can be a really competitive mode of transportation for people accessing downtown just because there are so many people wanting to come here that we really need to use that space efficiently. And transit and biking and walking are the most space efficient uses of our streets. So it really is an exciting idea to help transform our streets into being more accessible for people biking in the downtown. But we're not ignoring the neighborhoods. You know, we are neighborhood based and working in all the different neighborhoods around Seattle. And we're working to connect those neighborhoods with safe places to bike between the neighborhoods and within the neighborhoods.
How successful has the bike network been so far?
Where it's been done well, it's been really successful. You know, the 58th Greenway in Ballard saw use jump dramatically when it was put in. Like I said, around 2nd Avenue, when that was extended just a little bit through Belltown, use jumped 40%. Other bike lanes around the city have seen similar increases in the number of people biking. But, you know, like I mentioned earlier, too, if we don't build out the connected network, we're not going to see the sort of transformational growth in the number of people who feel safe and comfortable and convenient biking that we all want to see.
Where do the plans to complete the network or make it bigger stand at the moment?
That's a good question. It's been a bit of a transition with the new mayor. Every new mayor likes to put things on pause and sort of reassess. And a lot of us have been concerned with, for instance, delaying the 4th Avenue bike lane downtown. It's supposed to be built this year. Now it's being built in 2021. Other plans are moving forward, which we're excited about. Like I mentioned earlier, connecting downtown to Capitol Hill and Pike Pine. There's some challenges right now around the transportation levy that funds the bulk of all the walking and biking and transit and repaving projects we do in Seattle. Voters may remember it as the Move Seattle levy. It was passed. It's a 9-year transportation levy. And the city is really looking at how do we make sure we deliver on the promises that we made to voters. And right now in Seattle, the costs are something like 20% higher than original estimates or what things were coming in for earlier. That number is not exact, but basically costs have been escalating as construction has gotten more and more expensive, and it's been harder to find people to hire for these construction jobs. So working through those issues is something we're really committed to so we can deliver on a safe network that people want to use.
Say more about how successful protected bike networks have been in other North American cities.
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, I think there's a good local example from Vancouver where they implemented a network of places to bike and they saw growth take off dramatically. And it was controversial there. The local newspaper was very upset and different commenters were very upset. But at the end, once they built out a safe network, they really saw biking take off in a big way. New York has seen a similar thing. They have been slow to build out a bike network, but recently they've been moving at a very rapid pace because they've realized the promise that biking can offer major cities, and they've seen a dramatic increase in the number of people biking too. So those are two great examples of where it's really being done well, and they're seeing the benefits of it.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM by mobile app. And on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Gordon Bedelford, Executive Director of Seattle Neighborhood Greenways. Our topic is the work of Seattle Neighborhood Greenways to advocate for biking and walking and to create safer streets. Would you speak about the efforts of Seattle Neighborhood Greenways to advocate for walking and biking projects with historically underserved communities?
Yeah, it's a great question. So one of the sad facts about the built environment, the way we've designed our cities, is that people of color and low-income communities are disproportionately burdened by traffic collisions and injuries and fatalities. That's national data, and it is something we need to address as a society. No matter who you are, where you live, you should feel safe and comfortable walking across the street to a bus stop, walking to a grocery store, walking with your kids to school, walking to a local park. That's just a fundamental right of being a citizen in a city. You should have that right. And that is not being delivered equitably around the city. So we're focused on righting that historic wrong and working with communities like the Rainier Valley to fix the most dangerous street in Seattle, which is Rainier Avenue. The sidewalks along Rainier Avenue are in awful condition in a lot of cases, and it may not be accessible for people in a wheelchair or even people pushing a stroller or using a cane or any other form of mobility device. And when you try and cross the street, it's often a really harrowing experience. You may not have enough time. You know, something we did a few years ago was study how much time people had to cross in Ballard versus the Rainier Avenue, and we found a big disparity between people being given a lot more time to cross the street in Ballard versus Rainier Avenue. So that's a project we've cared a lot about for a long time, because we did some pretty deep community engagement when our local chapter, Rainier Valley Greenways, was getting started, to really listen to the community, listen what their needs were. And the thing that we kept hearing over and over again is that these dangerous streets can really act as physical barriers dividing our communities. And Rainier Avenue is one of those barriers that really divides the community on either side, because, you know, parents don't want to let their kids go to the other side of Rainier Avenue. And that's really tragic. And it's something we're committed to changing. It's something the city is also committed to changing. We're pushing them to do it sooner. It's been a number of years, and we want to see that completed sooner, but it's something we've been working on. You know, another project I would highlight is in South Park and Georgetown. You know, I think there's been a lot of reporting around the health disparities in that area with the toxics and all the challenges around the Superfund sites down there. But something people don't think about as much is the fact that the built environment means that you may not have access to your school, to a library, to a park, to a grocery store in the Duwamish Valley, because on one side of the river, you've got those assets. You have the bank, you have the school, you have the playground. On the other side, you don't. You may have the community center and a park, but you don't have the other things. So this has been a really exciting project. It's been something the community has wanted for a long time, to connect both Georgetown and South Park by a safe walking and biking route. And it's a project we call the Georgetown to South Park Trail, and we're really excited about it. It's one of the other victories we're really happy with. Last fall, we got funding from the city council, who allocated money to begin the design and community outreach towards really bridging those two communities and giving people a healthy and safe transportation option to get where they need to go. So we're really excited about both of those projects to try and right some historical wrongs.
Would you also speak about your work with Safe Routes to School?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked. So we are committed to making it safe and easy for every child to walk and bike to school. And right now, that's really not the case for most communities. You know, historically, the majority of kids in the 1950s or so were walking and biking to school. And now a lot of folks are bused or they're driven, just because the streets around the schools aren't safe. So we're committed towards changing that and giving kids and parents the options of having their kids walk and bike to school again. So we're approaching that from two angles. One is we're working with four low-income schools around Seattle to assess what their needs are, working with the school community to identify the challenges and barriers they're facing and some of the solutions to making it easier for kids to walk and bike to school. And then secondly, we're also focused more systemically, knowing that we can't address each of these problems at such a slow rate. We really need to think about some systemic big picture change. So we're hoping to work with the school board to think about, when we are remodeling or building new schools, how can we really design in convenient crosswalks or convenient sidewalks into those schools? Oftentimes right now, that's an afterthought. You know, it took our volunteers up in North Seattle 3 years of hard work, and us as staff, you know, we have three staff at Seattle Neighborhood Greenways, 3 years of hard work to getting one east-west safe place to walk and bike. And there's a new crossing at Aurora, which is really exciting. There's a new trail. There's a new sidewalk. There's a new walking and biking lane across I-5 as part of the Robert Eaglestaff Middle School complex. But that was incredibly time-consuming, and it only serves a small number of kids. So we really need to be addressing this from a much bigger picture angle. So we're really excited about tackling that over the coming years.
Where else do you plan to focus your efforts over the next year?
So we are really community-driven, and we are run by volunteers. If you're out there and you're thinking about, should I get involved, we could really use your help in helping making every neighborhood a safe place to walk and bike and live. At the same time, we're recognizing that it's a challenging moment right now with saving the basic bike network downtown, with making sure the Move Seattle levy stays on track, and with holding the city accountable to reducing traffic fatalities down to zero, which is a goal called Vision Zero, which the city has committed to by 2030. But currently, we need to be more committed to that goal if we're going to reach it, essentially. So those are some of the big things. And growth in Seattle is really challenging right now. So there's a big question around how we grow gracefully and how we create the sort of communities we all want to live in, where we can walk and bike and live safely and comfortably.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
I would say get involved with us or similar organizations. It really is up to community members to help shape the city we live in and the world we live in. And it makes a big difference to have people who care showing up to meetings or writing into their city council members or commenting or talking to their neighbors about why this sort of change is important. Change is really hard. And if we have people out there who are talking about a positive vision for how their communities can change for the better, that's incredibly helpful, because we know that there are going to be some cantankerous voices who come out and don't want to see anything different. And having some positive voices in that choir is really helpful, so we can have a civic dialogue about where we want to go as a city. So I encourage everyone to get involved, and together we can really create a city that reflects our shared values and needs.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Gordon.
Thanks for having me.
You were just listening to Gordon Padelford, Executive Director of Seattle Neighborhood Greenways. For more information, check on the web at seattlegreenways.org. Sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts, along with KEXP's music podcasts. Go to the podcast section of KEXP's website at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on listener-powered 90.3 FM by mobile app and at kexp.org.